Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu says Israel will decide how to defend itself.
It's clear the Israelis are making a decision to act. We hope they do so in a way that does as little to escalate this as possible.
Jordan says it will not be a battleground between Israel and Iran.
It has to protect its sovereignty. It does not want to be dragged into an open conflict, whether from the Iranian side or the Israeli side.
And a once loyal Trump attorney prepares to testify against the former U.S. president.
This is all about accountability. He needs to be held accountable.
Today is Thursday, April 18th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Alexis Strope. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is steadfast that Israel will make its own decisions about how to defend itself after a barrage of Iranian missiles and drones launched from Tehran last Saturday. Western countries, meanwhile, are pleading for a restrained response from Israel. Reuters correspondent Zachary Goldman has more.
German Foreign Minister Annalena Baerbock said Berlin stood in full solidarity with Israel, but warned the region must not, quote, step by step slide into a situation with a totally unpredictable outcome. UK Foreign Secretary David Cameron said he expected an Israeli response to Iran, hoping it would be limited.
It's clear the Israelis are making a decision to act. We hope they do so in a way that does as little to escalate this as possible, and in a way that, as I said yesterday, is smart as well as tough.
The Iranian attack on Saturday included cruise missiles, ballistic missiles, and explosive drones. They were mostly shot down by Israel and its allies and caused no deaths. Iran said the bombardment was retaliation for a presumed Israeli strike that killed senior Iranian military figures in a diplomatic compound in Damascus earlier in April. Following the attack, Iran's foreign minister warned Israel against reprisals, saying, quote, it will definitely face a decisive and harsh response. Washington says it is planning to impose new sanctions targeting Iran's missile and drone programs in coming days and expects its allies will follow suit. EU leaders are due to discuss sanctions at a summit in Brussels, and sanctions are also on the agenda at G7 talks in Italy.
Reuters correspondent Zachary Goldman. While Israel mulls a response to Iran, Hezbollah and Israel continue to trade volleys since Israel killed a top Hezbollah commander in a missile strike on Tuesday. The Israeli army said several launches from Lebanon were identified crossing into the area of Arab al-Aramshi in northern Israel and responded, targeting the sources of the fire. All of this while ceasefire discussions continue with mediators Qatar and Egypt. Qatari Prime Minister and Foreign Minister Sheikh Mohammed bin Abdulrahman Al Thani said on Wednesday, talks are at a delicate phase.
The negotiations are between moving forward and stumbling, and during this time we are passing through a delicate phase with some stumbling, and we are trying as much as possible to address this stumbling block and to move forward to put an end to this suffering that the Palestinian people are passing through in Gaza, as well as to retrieve the hostages.
The ceasefire discussions are continuing as a humanitarian crisis in Gaza leaves Palestinians with severe shortages of food, medicine, and hospital care. Also, the United Nations Security Council scheduled a vote on Friday on a Palestinian Authority request for full UN membership. U.S. Ambassador to the UN Linda Thomas-Greenfield says while the U.S. supports a two-state solution, they don't agree full UN membership for the Palestinian Authority will help achieve that goal.
We do not see that doing a resolution in the Security Council will necessarily get us to a place where we can find a solution, a two-state solution moving forward.
A more pressing vote for the U.S. is in the House of Representatives, where House Speaker Mike Johnson is expected to bring a vote on aid to the floor, and that aid includes not only Israel, but Ukraine and Taiwan as well.
There are precipitating events around the globe that we're all watching very carefully, and we know that the world is watching us to see how we react. We have terrorists and tyrants and terrible leaders around the world like Putin and Xi and in Iran, and they're watching to see if America will stand up for its allies and in our own interest around the globe, and we will.
Above all of this is a question from the very beginning when Israel was attacked on October 7th. Can Israel destroy Hamas? VOA's Steve Karish speaks with David Alberetti with the International Security Program at the Center for Strategic and International Studies.
Is Israel misguided in thinking they can defeat Hamas? I think that, you know, to your original question about, you know, what does it mean to destroy Hamas, you know, the way we titled the article, you know, it, largely, you know, that may be viewed as a political statement, but, you know, to destroy Hamas and to defeat Hamas are two different things. We talked about in the article, you know, what some of those things mean, and, you know, in one fashion, it may, you know, that is one manner of destroying the group is by eliminating top leadership, and certainly that has been an objective that Israel has pursued. To defeat Hamas, rather, is, you know, perhaps a different objective, and you know, you see that is clearly encompassed in what Israel is trying to do. They are absolutely trying to defeat Hamas. The overarching goal is to stop, you know, Hamas from ever having the capability to conduct an attack like they did on October 7th, 2023.
Well, if Hamas is a terrorist organization like ISIS, like Al-Qaeda, as you mentioned, a large part of that is ideological. How can you defeat an ideology?
One of the ways in which you combat a terrorist ideology is by some sort of a counter-narrative. This is an extraordinarily difficult thing to counter a terrorist ideology. And again, what we've seen as we have combated other terrorist groups in other parts of the world, you know, defeating a group, as in, you know, territorial defeat of ISIS, does not, in fact, destroy the group or destroy its ideology.
If Israel succeeds in destroying Hamas by eliminating its leadership, by taking away its ability to do harm, what happens next? Who fills that void?
Israel doesn't want to govern the Gaza Strip by and large. Neither do, you know, neighboring countries and some of the alternatives that, you know, that we mentioned, like the Palestinian Authority, who governs the West Bank, is both, you know, politically weak and largely corrupt. And so, you know, they're not an ideal choice. And again, for them to be a viable alternative, they have to, you know, the population of the Gaza Strip, the Palestinians would have to be receptive to that group as an alternative. I mean, there's not much indication that, you know, there's a positive view of the Palestinian Authority in the Gaza Strip.
We'll leave it there for today. David Aliberti is a Navy Federal Executive Fellow with the International Security Program at the Center for Strategic and International Studies. Mr. Aliberti, thanks for your analysis today. I appreciate your time.
Steve, thanks so much for having me.
Jordan's King Abdullah says his country will not be a battleground in the confrontation between Israel and Iran, and the protection of its citizens and sovereignty are paramount. VOA's Dale Gavlak reports from Amman.
Jordanian analyst Osama El-Sharif tells VOA Jordan is in a delicate position.
It has to protect its sovereignty. It does not want to be dragged into an open conflict, whether from the Iranian side or the Israeli side. The situation in Jordan is emotionally charged because of Gaza. For the last 6 months, we have had almost weekly protests, very anti-American, very anti-Israeli. They are not in a position to understand the delicate situation that Jordan finds itself in. It wants to bring attention back to the Gaza war, the humanitarian crisis unfolding.
Analyst Amr Sabaili says that from the start of the Gaza conflict, leaders sense the danger that it could escalate to a larger regional crisis that is already evident in Syria, Lebanon, and the Red Sea. Now, he says, Jordanians got a taste of the conflict when they saw the missiles and drones being intercepted in the skies above them.
It made people worry and see that it might have concrete consequences in Jordan. And therefore, His Majesty's word is definitely reassuring and very clear. The priority for Jordan is the Jordanian security, stability, and security of its own people.
Shortly after the attacks, Jordan's foreign ministry summoned Iran's ambassador over Iranian media comments in which the Iranian leadership appeared to threaten Jordan for joining the U.S.-led effort to support Israel. The report said that if Jordan intervened, it would become the next target. In response, Iran's foreign ministry issued a statement Monday saying it wants to maintain good ties with Jordan. Dale Gavlak, VOA News, Amman.
We're following these other stories from around the world. Heavy thunderstorms have lashed the United Arab Emirates, dumping the heaviest rain ever recorded in the country in a span of hours as it flooded portions of major highways and the Dubai International Airport. By the end of Tuesday, more than 14.2 centimeters of rainfall had soaked Dubai over 24 hours. An average year? sees 9.48 centimeters of rain at Dubai International Airport, the world's busiest for international travel and a hub for the long-haul carrier Emirates. The United States and Italy agreed on Wednesday to coordinate efforts to counter the spread of misinformation and fake news articles by foreign governments. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken and Italian Foreign Minister Antonio Tajani agreed on the new pact during a meeting on the sidelines of a three-day meeting of Group of Seven foreign ministers on the island of Capri. Brazil is bracing for what may be its worst ever coral bleaching event as extremely warm waters damage reefs in the country's largest marine reserve, threatening the region's tourism and fishing revenues. Corals can recover if waters cool in time for them to be repopulated by the microalgae that live in their tissue. U.S. Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump is in a New York courtroom this week for jury selection in a case about his allegedly falsifying business records. Meanwhile, his Democratic opponent, President Joe Biden, is on the campaign trail talking about the candidate's competing visions of economic fairness. VOA correspondent Scott Stearns has our story.
U.S. presidential candidates Joe Biden and Donald Trump had decidedly different schedules this week. Trump is in a New York courtroom facing 34 felony counts of falsifying business records.
I don't know how you can have a trial that's going on right in the middle of an election. Not fair. Not fair.
Biden's on the campaign trail near his childhood home in the neighboring state of Pennsylvania.
Oh, strength!
Trump's trial involves him attempting to squash unflattering news stories during his 2016 campaign. Prosecutors say Trump falsified payments to a former lawyer to hide that the money was going to two women who said they had earlier extramarital sexual encounters with the then candidate. Trump has pleaded not guilty to the charges, and his lawyers argued the payments were legitimate legal expenses. Trump says tying him up in court is election interference by a weaponized judiciary.
This is an assault on our country. That is a country that's failing. It's a country that's run by an incompetent man who's very much involved in this case. This is really an attack on a political opponent. That's all it is.
Trump does not have to testify at this trial, but former federal prosecutor Nyama Ramani thinks politics means he will.
This case is as much for the courtroom as it is for the court of public opinion. And Trump is in the middle of an election year, and he will take the stand and he will talk to the American people and those undecided voters. I think him asserting his right to remain silent, I think that will be used against him by undecided voters.
With his opponent in court, Biden has the presidential campaign trail to himself.
Donald Trump looks at the world differently than you and me. He wakes up in the morning in Mar-a-Lago thinking about himself, how he can help his billionaire friends gain power and control and force their extreme agenda on the rest of us. Listen to what he says. He says, quote, I'll be dictator on day one. Quote, I am your retribution.
Biden said he and Trump have competing visions for the U.S. economy that raise questions of fundamental fairness.
Folks, where we come from matters. When I look at the economy, I don't see it through the eyes of Mar-a-Lago. I see it through the eyes of Scranton. And that's not hyperbole. That's a fact. Where honesty and decency matter. Where faith matters. Where family is everything.
Trump says being tied up in court while Biden is out campaigning is not fair.
I should be right now in Pennsylvania, in Florida, in many other states, North Carolina, Georgia, campaigning. This is all coming from the Biden White House because the guy can't put two sentences together. He can't campaign. They're using this in order to try and win an election.
Trump has squeezed in some New York campaigning around the trial, but his time in more competitive states appears, for the moment, confined to the weekends. Trump rallied supporters in Pennsylvania last Saturday and has a North Carolina event scheduled for this Saturday. Scott Stearns, VOA News.
Early Wednesday, Russian missiles struck the Ukrainian city of Chernihiv, only 150 kilometers from Kyiv. Several civilian buildings, including a hospital, were damaged. Meanwhile, President Volodymyr Zelensky announced Ukraine would request a meeting of the Ukraine-NATO Council devoted to the issue of protecting Ukrainian skies. VOA correspondent Anna Chernikova has the details from Kyiv.
President Zelensky expressed his condolences to the relatives and friends of the victims. He emphasized that this tragedy could have been avoided if Ukraine had received sufficient air defense equipment and more help from allies.
We work every day without a single break to increase our potential in the world, in our relations with partners. We work to get more real help, to achieve true equality in the defense against terror. When the same truly equal rules apply to us here in Ukraine, in Europe, and in other parts of the world, when we face the same manifestations of terror, the same missile and drone attacks.
Meanwhile, President Zelensky in his latest evening address announced that Ukraine would make a request for a meeting of the Ukraine-NATO Council devoted to the issue of protecting Ukrainian skies, as he again recalled how the United States and other Western allies joined in repelling Iran's missile and drone attack on Israel.
Ukraine will make a request.
Ukraine will request a meeting of the Ukraine-NATO Council to discuss the protection of the skies, the supply of anti-aircraft warfare, relevant systems, and missiles.
The White House has said that the U.S. will not participate in the war in Ukraine, and it will not shoot down drones launched by Russia, as it and its allies did last weekend in Israel. Anna Chernikova, VOA News, Kyiv.
It was over before it started. The U.S. Senate impeachment trial of Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas. House Republicans had been pushing for the impeachment of Mayorkas over his handling of U.S.-Mexico border security, which they accomplished in part because of the majority Republicans hold in the House. But Senate Democrats disagreed with the articles of impeachment, saying House Republicans failed to meet, quote, the high standard of high crimes and misdemeanors. Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell lambasted Senate Democrats for voting to toss the charges.
It doesn't make any difference whether our friends on the other side thought he should have been impeached or not. He was. And by doing what we just did, we have, in effect, ignored the directions of the House, which were to have a trial. We had no evidence, no procedure. This is a day that's not a proud day in the history of the Senate.
The first article charged Mayorkas with, quote, willful and systematic refusal to comply with immigration law. The second article charged Mayorkas with a, quote, breach of trust for saying the border was secure. The votes were 51 to 48 and 51 to 49, both along party lines. VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Alexis Strope. India's mammoth-phased election that begins Friday will pit Prime Minister Narendra Modi's Hindu nationalist Bharatiya Janata Party against an opposition alliance of over two dozen parties. While Modi is wooing voters by promising to continue the country's development, the opposition has raised concerns about threats to democracy. VOA's Anjana Pasricha reports from New Delhi.
10 years after taking power, Modi remains hugely popular. He is seen as a strong nationalist pro-Hindu leader who has fast-tracked development, boosted India's global stature, and delivered on promises like building a temple to Hindu Lord Ram. But surveys show unemployment and inflation remain key concerns as it fails to create enough jobs. To woo voters, the main opposition Congress party has promised to boost social spending and employment by giving government jobs and apprenticeships. Its leader, Rahul Gandhi, has led two cross-country marches to connect with people, but it is unclear whether that will translate into votes for the party, which was routed in the last two elections. Gandhi has not been projected as a prime ministerial candidate.
As far as Mr. Modi is concerned, there is no one on the opposite side to match him. And a lot of people who are dissatisfied today with the BJP rule and face economic hardship, unemployment, rising prices, they talk about it, but then will turn around and say, but who is there on the other side?
Surveys project Modi's BJP could surpass its 2019 performance. But the Congress party says the results, due on June 4th, will be closer than expected. Anjana Pasricha, VOA News, New Delhi.
He was a staunch defender of Donald Trump for years. He even claimed he would take a bullet for the former president. And now he's a star witness in a first-of-its-kind criminal trial in the United States, a criminal case against a former U.S. president and his former boss. Reuters correspondent Alex Cohen has more.
Michael Cohen, for years until Trump became president, was his loyal deputy, right? He was his lawyer, a quote-unquote fixer. So basically, you know, when problems arose for Trump while he was working in the real estate industry, Michael Cohen basically took care of them. He was known for being very loyal to Trump.
Cohen pleaded guilty to breaking federal campaign finance laws over his role in the alleged hush money scheme. He served time in jail for that and other crimes, including cheating on his personal taxes and lying under oath to Congress.
Mr. Trump is a con man. He asked me to pay off an adult film star with whom he had an affair and to lie about it to his wife, which I did.
Cohen turned on Trump amid that investigation and testified about it in 2019.
He ended up pleading guilty and breaking with Trump, right? So, and you know, he did pay a heavy price.
Now the former fixer stands ready to help Manhattan District Attorney Alvin Bragg criminally prosecute Trump. Trump's attorneys are expected to take aim at Cohen's credibility.
He is still, you know, an admitted perjurer, right? Pleaded guilty to perjury. That is, you know, going to be a liability for him on the witness stand.
Trump has called the case against him a politically motivated witch hunt meant to harm his candidacy as he mounts a third run for the White House. The trial is expected to run through May.
Reuters correspondent Alex Cohen. This has been International Edition on the Voice of America. On behalf of everyone at VOA, thank you for joining us. For pictures, stories, videos, and more, follow VOA News on your favorite social media platform and online at voanews.com. In Washington, I'm Alexis Strope.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
14 times since last September, Russia has called a meeting of the United Nations Security Council to try to shift the blame of its aggression against Ukraine to that selfsame neighbor. It is attempting to change the narrative of February 24, 2022, by trying to portray Ukraine as the aggressor in a war that was initiated by the Russian Federation, intimating that the inherent right to self-defense does not apply to Ukraine, or by extension to any small country, and that Ukraine is not entitled to receive assistance from its allies as it desperately tries to protect its citizens and its territory. Let us be clear, the Russian Federation is not the victim in Vladimir Putin's unprovoked war on Ukraine. We listen closely to Russia's words, said Ambassador John Kelly, U.S. political minister counselor at the UN. But let us also look at its actions.
Russia is committing aggression against a sovereign UN member state. Russia continues to ruthlessly attack Ukraine in pursuit of territorial conquest.
But even as it castigates Ukraine's allies for supplying it with the means to defend itself, Russia solicits and receives war material from UN-banned sources.
Since last December, Russian forces have used DPRK-supplied ballistic missiles to strike Ukraine nearly a dozen times, firing upwards of 40 DPRK ballistic missiles. Since last September, Russia has procured over 11,000 shipping containers of munitions and munitions-related material from the DPRK in violation of the UN arms embargo on the DPRK.
Finally, Russia also continues to deepen its military relationship with Iran, including through its continued acquisition of armed Iranian unmanned aerial vehicles used to target Ukrainian civilians and civilian infrastructure, said Ambassador Kelly.
We continue to be concerned about reports Russia seeks to procure ballistic missiles from Iran. Such an acquisition would represent a significant escalation in Iran's support for Russia's war of aggression.
The international community has overwhelmingly condemned Russian aggression against Ukraine. As I've said before, Russia can end this war today, said Ambassador Kelly. The United States remains committed to providing Ukraine what it needs to defend itself. We once again call for Russia to immediately withdraw its forces from Ukraine's territory within its internationally recognized borders and stop its unlawful procurement of DPRK origin material.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.